Our next stop, stop four, is the house of a renowned librarian, Miss Heron. To get there, come back down Mostyn Street and at Hargrave Street turn right and walk up the left side of Hargrave Street to the next intersection, Littleton Street, and there you stop. And on the way, a couple of landmarks. And remember, if I get ahead of you, pause this any time you wish. On the way back down Mostyn Street on the left, you'll pass the luxury hotel, The Empire. There, take a look through the large glass door. Inside you'll see what was a corridor. It's now part of the restaurant, but when this was the Albion Hotel, that passage was for horse-drawn Cobb and Co. coaches. They entered one end and departed the other, dropping off their passengers in the middle. Next after The Empire, there's a cafe called Saps. And on the front wall, you'll see the painted signs from the gold rush, when this building was a hardware of sorts, selling picks, ropes, buckets, and other equipment to the diggers. And this being a gold town, there's always dispute about who discovered gold, both here and across Australia. Nationally, the title goes to a New South Welshman, Edward Hargraves, who later visited Castlemaine and so had a street named after him. But was Hargraves the first to find gold? As you walk on, here's Robin Anear again.
People found gold in Victoria for certain, and New South Wales, I believe, too, from very early days when they were settled. You know, there are stories about convicts picking up gold and so on so forth. And in Victoria, there were people who went up into the creeks and hills just outside of Melbourne, you know, as early as the 1830s and were picking up gold. So people knew where the gold was, that there was gold and where it was. But, of course, it was illegal to dig for gold. It belonged to the Queen, so nothing was made of it. People kept that secret and just used to do underhand deals with the jewellers in Melbourne or Sydney. But Edmund Hammond Hargraves had been to the gold rushes of 1849, 1848 in California. He was one of many who went from Australia to there. And when he came back, he had a pretty good idea how to read the countryside. So he was more systematically inclined than many and traced the source of gold, but also he was more commercially or more of a businessman than gold hunters had been before in Australia. And he employed a band of men to come out with him and basically do the hard graft. But he read the countryside a bit, figured out where he reckoned was a good proposition or good prospect, got these men to dig for it and found payable gold. And then, as a businessman might, approach the authorities and really gave them not much choice about whether or not he would start a gold rush. He more or less said, look, you can have it two ways. You can sanction the finding of gold and the digging of gold, or I'll just start an illegal, you know, uprising, if you like, of gold digging, and that will be more difficult for you to manage. And so in that way, gold digging started to become legal in Australia, and it was through his efforts as a businessman, and as a bit of a crook, as a bit of a hard arm twister, that gold digging became legal. And because, of course, once it was sanctioned in New South Wales and half of Victoria's population started to head north, Victoria had to follow suit, and so the gold rushes, you know, took off.
He actually visited here, and that's why the street is named after him. And he was absolutely staggered at the amount of gold that was found in and around Castlemaine. Not just the amount, but the quality and the size of it.
And as mentioned earlier, for the story of the gold rush at Castlemaine, you can go to the diggings tour, but by now you should be near the corner of Hargraves and Littleton. If not, pause this till you're there. And if you are there, the building on the corner was built in 1859 as the Supreme Court Hotel. It was the watering hole for the law, the court being across Littleton Street. Here's Brian.
It's known now as Heron's Art Gallery because there was an owner here, Miss Heron, and she was very helpful with supporting things around the town, extremely supportive, as in money and other support too. I like to think of people who don't just give money, who wholeheartedly support something that's happening in the town. So she was certainly one of those.
And Robin, do you know Miss Heron?
I do, Miss Heron. I've never met the woman, but Marie Heron was her name, and she was the long time, not quite the longest serving librarian in the Castlemaine Library, but she was that long serving librarian within living memory. So many people in this town remember Miss Heron well, and she was librarian from the 30s, 20s or 30s through to the 60s of the 20th century, and in that capacity, she scared the bejesus out of generations of Castlemaine children, I think, because she was one of the, you know, one of the very stern variety of the classic, the ubiquitous variety of librarians, and with the finger perpetually at the lips in a shushing motion. But at the same time, you can also meet plenty of people in whom Miss Heron fostered a love of reading. So long as you were one of those fairly well-behaved boys, you stood a good chance of being taken under the wing of Miss Heron and had some good books put your way. So Castlemaine is a very booky and reading sort of town, and always has been since Gold Rush times. It's had a library for a long time and had bookshops in tents from the off. So, you know, Miss Heron is part of that continuum and certainly has encouraged a lot of book loving in the town, as well as a bit of fear.
And directly opposite is the St Mary's Hall, associated with St Mary's Church. And in 1916, a lot of young Australian men were being taken overseas to fight in the 1914-18 war. A young archbishop in Melbourne, Archbishop Mannix, came up because he didn't like the thought of all these young people going and fighting and dying overseas, and he felt very sorry for the mothers, and he came to organise a meeting in Castlemaine, and he asked the council could he have a hall, and the council were for king and country and said, no, we can't give you a hall, you're going to talk about anti-conscription. So he said, right. So he hired a marquee, and when he finished his talk, he said, this will never happen again. And he organised a fundraiser, and he said, now it's up to you, you've got to finish raising the rest of the money, and I want to come back and open the hall. So the hall you see over there, which was finished in 1918, was the work of Archbishop Mannix. So he was a firebrand when he was a young fellow.
And do we know how successful Archbishop Mannix was in persuading the people of Castlemaine to vote against conscription?
The youth going off to war to be killed overseas. It's always strange to me, strange back then and strange now. So, yeah, I think he would have had a pretty good argument.
Twice Australia voted against conscription, and Mannix himself went on to be one of our prominent religious and political figures. Now we are going on to view a couple of lock-ups, one for the gold and one for the drunks. Directions are at the beginning of track 5.